Well, the story, I've already told you the story of how Nero blamed the Christians for starting the Great Fire of Rome, right? And I've told you the story of the arrests and the gruesome deaths that these people suffered. And so the point that I want to bring here is that Clement is ascribing this persecution. Once again, we're seeing this persecution ascribed to this idea of jealousy, of envy, of internal division among the brothers and sisters. Baseless hatred is the theme. Baseless hatred among believers, between the people of God, I guess is the way I'm trying to say. And this implies, once again, it implies collusion of informants from within the believing community, or perhaps from within the Jewish community. Because of jealousy, women were persecuted as Danaids and Dirce, or Dirce. And we learned that story as well. But he says, suffering in this way terrible and unholy tortures, but they safely reached the goal in the race of faith and received a noble reward, their physical weakness notwithstanding. So, just to remind you, they were persecuted. I have where it says many indignities and tortures on this sheet. I have a quote from Tacitus who describes the persecution. He says, mockery and every sort of insult was added to their deaths. Dressed in the skins of wild animals, they were torn apart by dogs and died. They were nailed to crosses or doomed to the flames and burnt alive to serve as a nightly illumination when daylight expired. This was at the big festival at Circus Neronis and Vatican Hill, the big festival where Nero was hosting these games, these chariot races and these events, and using the occasion to put to death all these Roman Christians he had rounded up, because he was holding them responsible for arson, for intentionally burning down Rome. That's what was going on here. And so the way that the women were treated, Clement makes special notice of what happened to the women. So in Greek mythology, the Danaid sisters, were there was 49 of these sisters, daughters of a man named Danaus, and he wanted to find husbands for his 49 daughters. So he hosted this big race, and the contenders in the race, as they would come to the finish line, they would just grab the daughter they wanted. And that's how these girls got their husbands. So what's being implied here is that the Christian women were used as prizes for the chariot racers at Circus Neronis. So, you know, they would get, and whatever the competitions were, the other competitions as well, I'm sure. So they would get to rape the women that they wanted. And this is he follows that example with Dirce, or Dirce. Dirce in Greek mythology was tied, she had long hair, and her hair was tied to the horns of a bull, and the bull dragged her and gored her and trampled her to death. So one of the things that Nero did was to dramatize. He loved to dramatize Greek mythology. He was really into the Greek classics and Greek mythology, and he was really into theater, and he loved live theater. And so if there was a war, he used gladiators. So you know how we like to watch violent movies in our culture today, right? Well, they didn't have violent movies, and they weren't so good at special effects, so he would just have people kill each other, you know, for entertainment. And that's what they would do. He would actually, like, there'd be thousands and thousands and thousands of roaring fans, and then they would march people against each other and have them, you know, slaughter each other on the field. So that's what's going on here, is using the Christians for these sorts of things. There's one more thing that I would suggest, and that's in the Danaid mythology. you know, these denied sisters, they didn't like their husbands too much, so they ended up all killing their husbands, and then they ended up going to Hades for it and that sort of thing. And in Hades, they were damned in Hades, and they had to, one of the punishments that they had to do was endlessly fill a leaking bath with buckets of water. So, oh, you know, just all the time carrying these buckets of water, filling this bath, and the water's leaking out. Which I think Nero might have done this as well. He might have had them do something like this to allude to the futile firefighting efforts during the several days of the blaze of Rome. Everybody was trying to put this fire out and just couldn't be stopped. Anyway, terrible, terrible story, the Neronian persecution, and we've already learned it. We've already spent a long time learning it. So I'm just kind of moving over it very quickly tonight. But you have to think about Clement as the bishop now of Rome. And this persecution he's describing would be, if it's 95, that was 62, he's thinking back like 33 years ago. He's an old man now, right? So he's thinking back, and he was an eyewitness to these things. Somehow he survived these things. But he's thinking back 33 years ago when the people he knew and loved and fellowship with and that sort of thing suffered these atrocities, and there's this great massacre in Rome. I mean, how does that impact the consciousness of a community? So he says, and these women, they receive a noble reward, their physical weakness notwithstanding. Then he goes on to say, jealousy has estranged wives from their husbands and annulled the saying of our father Adam, this is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. Now, that's a real strange transition, don't you think? Yeah. You go from talking about the horrors of the Neronian persecution and then go and talk, and you know what? Sometimes husbands and wives don't get along either. It's like, what's the relationship here? I think there is a relationship here. And I think the relationship is something that we can learn, again, by studying the Roman history of these events. Because a big part of the Roman history of these events was this, remember, especially right now, as he's writing this epistle, under Domitian's persecution, this call to the Roman public to inform the authorities of any Gentiles who are practicing Jewish customs or drifting into Jewish ways. And so this is splitting up families, is breaking up families. We know from the apostolic record and from apocryphal literature that very often, remember this, we kept talking about this and when we were learning the stories of the apostles, very often one spouse gets it and says, yeah, this Jewish monotheism makes a lot of sense. And the other's like, I'm not giving up the idols, right? That was a very typical sort of thing. And so what I think is being alluded to here is that some of the informants in the persecutions were husbands who said, yeah, you know what? And they got my wife too. And now, you know, now she's not worshiping the gods, and she's not behaving like a good pagan idolatress anymore. You know, she's, right. So, he says, jealousy has estranged wives from their husbands and annulled the saying of our father Adam, this is now bone of my bones, flesh of my flesh. What is the saying of our father Adam who says bone of my bones? That's Genesis 2:23, the passage that says they shall become one flesh. So my suggestion here is that Clement is tactfully referring to tensions in Roman households where one spouse has drifted into quote-unquote atheism, which is what they called us, the atheists, or Jewish ways, which is the other thing they called us, the Jewish superstition. That is, has become a Christian. Okay, one more verse here at the end of this chapter. It says, and jealousy and strife have overthrown great cities and uprooted great nations. Again, what does that have to do with what just came before? And I think chronologically, it does make sense. If you're talking about the Neronian persecution, and the which was in 62, and the death of Peter, which was in 62, and then the death of Paul, which was in 67, just 3 years later is the overthrow of great cities. That is Jerusalem and all the cities of Judea and the Galilee. And remember from last week, I said we can read this word zealotus, this word zeal, jealousy. It's the Greek word for zealotry. So every time he says jealousy, you can think of the zealot movement of the first century. Or you could translate it as baseless hatred. So I would translate this, instead of jealousy and strife, I would say zealotry and baseless hatred have overthrown great cities and uprooted great nations. You know why the Talmud says, according to the Talmud, why it says that Jerusalem fell? What was the sin of Jerusalem? Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Baseless hatred. And so I think you have a direct correspondence here in Clement 6, 4. Jealousy and strife have overthrown great cities. All right. Chapter 7. Oh, wait. Any questions on chapter 6? Comments, questions, chapter 6. It's a pretty important chapter, historically speaking. It paints, other than the Roman sources, this is the only source we have from an eyewitness, a believer of the Neronian persecutions. Yes.
In your study of this, I don't know if you covered this last week, so I'll ignore the question if you did, but why didn't Clement make it into the canon, because it was included in some people's lists?
Yes, we did go over that last week, but it's worth asking again and addressing again. So the epistle we're studying is like from the extended version of the Bible, you know, or the director's cut, if you prefer. Or perhaps it's the deleted scenes from the end of the DVD. It should be in the Bible, according to some opinions. Why isn't it? Well, the final canonical lists that were drawn up for most of the church, even though I think it's still read in some places, but for most of the church, the final canonical lists don't include Clement, and they have good reasons. The main reason is that the criteria for making it into the New Testament was you had to be an apostle or writing on behalf of an apostle. So Luke's not an apostle, but come on, he's writing on behalf of Paul, he's recording Paul's adventures, and he's compiling apostolic information and literature and that sort of thing. So Luke's in, even though he's not an apostle. Same goes for Mark. Mark's not an apostle, but he's writing Peter's teachings down. So Mark, you see how that works? Clement, it's right on the edge there. He's not, definitely not an apostle. He's a Roman. He's a Roman. Maybe he's Jewish by now. Maybe he's converted. I think he has. I think he's Jewish. So Clement is, that's the main reason Clement didn't make it. Because he's a disciple of an apostle. The other reason that is often cited, but I think it's not as big a deal, is that Clement talks about the phoenix, the mythological bird, the phoenix, as if it actually existed. I don't think that's why he's not in the final canon, though. Because for one thing, who cares? All right. And number two, who's to say there wasn't a phoenix in the first century? I would say you have to prove there was no phoenix. Yeah, I think. Yeah. So.
There was no Albuquerque either.
Well, you know what the everyone know what the phoenix is? You don't know what the phoenix is? Phoenix is a bird. It's a remarkable bird that there's only one at a time. There's only one phoenix at a time. He lives about a century. And after a century, he flies around. He flies to a certain nest where he bursts into flames. Whoosh! And then after the conflagration of the phoenix, there's a little baby phoenix in the ashes. He grows up and he's the next phoenix for the next century or so. However long a phoenix lives, I forget. Clement will tell us all about it when we get there. All right. Chapter 7.
It could be true.
That's what I'm saying.